Hey there, I'm Christopher Schoenwald, and welcome to Life As a show intently focused on helping people find their professional pathway by exploring and unearthing the details of jobs from around the world. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to throw this out there. I have a channel over on YouTube, lifeasa.dot, which basically hosts highlights from these audio conversations that I have with these great guests. They typically run 10 to 15 minutes, and they're there to kind of present a different vantage point. You know, for people that aren't into audio, aren't into podcasts, but are still looking for career advice, ideas, help, all that great stuff, send them over to YouTube. Like I said, lifeasa.dot. And if you do get over there, I would love that like or subscribe. I mean, it's the best way to let that algorithm know that the content is worth sharing and should be out there. So anyway, I do thank you for letting me plug this a little bit, but I think it's about time to get into today's episode. Let's play a game. I have a job title for you. What you need to do is correctly identify what this profession is all about. You got it? You ready? Okay, here goes. So what is an industrial hygiene specialist? Or also known as an occupational hygiene specialist in other countries. What is this profession concerned with? A, dental matters. B, worker health and safety matters. Or C, environmental issues. Well, this is a bit of a trick question. The answer is actually B, worker health and safety matters, and C, environmental issues. And to be completely honest with you, before diving into this profession, I had no idea what it was all about. But after speaking with today's guests, though, I learned a ton about this work as far as what it's all about, roles, responsibilities, challenges, and how it's actually a profession that's not only critically important in form and function, but also in high demand. And it's also a job that combines travel and a high degree of social interactivity. So if all of this has you intrigued, you owe it to yourself to listen in to our guest. Her name is Robin Harn, and she's an Australian professional industrial hygiene specialist who now works for one of the largest mining companies in the world. And she was kind enough to stop by and break down her work so as to shed some much-needed light on this profession. So let me more formally introduce her to you, and we can get things started. Robin Harn is the industrial hygiene specialist for California operations at Rio Tinto, a Fortune 500 company and one of the biggest mining companies in the world. Rio Tinto operates in 35 countries with over 52,000 employees worldwide. Now, originally from Australia, Robin is now based at Rio Tinto's Boron Mine in Boron, California. It is California's largest open pit mine and the largest borax mine in the world, producing nearly half of the world's borates. Boron is vital to plant growth and is used in fertilizers and other industries such as glass manufacturing, wood production, and insulation, fiberglass. Now, what is interesting about Robin is that she never thought she would end up working in America or even in the industrial hygiene field she never knew existed when she first started thinking about what's next after her secondary education. After achieving her bachelor's in environmental science and environmental rehabilitation 15 years ago, Robin joined a construction company working on multi-million and billion-dollar projects before transferring to occupational hygiene, as it's known in Australia. Since then, she has also obtained a postgraduate in applied science focusing on occupational hygiene and another postgraduate degree in environmental health. These degrees, plus other educational diplomas, have all allowed Robin to pursue her passion in the mining and construction field, helping the environment and the people who work within the industry. And Robin now happily applies her insights and experience to ensure that health is at the forefront within the mining world. So, with all of this noted, I'd like to welcome you to my conversation with Robin Harn.
Yeah, so welcome to the program. How are you doing today, Robin?
I'm good. How are you?
Really good. I mean, excited for this conversation for quite some time. I mean, your profession unto itself represents this black box, I think, for a lot of people, and myself included. You know, before we got into this or before I got into the research for this, you know, industrial hygiene specialist, like, I really had no idea. So that alone, you know, I was intrigued and I'm excited to have this conversation and to share it with listeners. So yeah, I do have this first segment lined up and it's something called Coloring Wikipedia. And as my listeners know, it's a segment where I just read off a definition of something related to the work. And surprise, surprise, I do have you down here for occupational hygiene. So let me just read that off and then after you can share your comments. Does that sound okay?
Sounds perfect.
Okay, so here we go. Occupational hygiene. Occupational hygiene, aka industrial hygiene in the United States, is the anticipation, recognition, evaluation, control, and confirmation of protection from risks associated with exposures to hazards in or arising from the workplace that may result in injury, illness, impairment, or affect the well-being of workers and members of the community. There it is, a bit wordy and maybe a bit simplistic perhaps, I don't know, or generalized. But first take, what do you think of that?
I actually think it's a really good description of what we're trying to encapsulate. It's my role in positions like mine are so varied and diverse that trying to capture it all in one little blurb is actually really hard. So that whoever wrote that did a great job.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to emphasize or like add to the definition or de-emphasize perhaps?
One of the things that is in that little blurb but not quite emphasized enough is communication. So we can go through the process of ARUC, which is anticipate, recognize, evaluate, control, and confirm. But if we don't communicate, what are we doing? So I think that needs to be more emphasized in that description. But a lot of people are just incorporating that into the just in general and what they do in our profession.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think that adds a little bit more insight there. And it's always interesting to have these definitions and to hear that little bit of extra that kind of like separates the job from something else. And it provides this clearer, idea or understanding. And this might also be a nice opportunity to hear more about your work. I mean, certainly I read off your bio information off the top here, but maybe to clarify things even further, you could explain a little bit more about what you're doing.
So like the description explains, in my position in particular, I work in heavy industry. So I've worked in mining, refinery, construction, multi-million and billion-dollar projects. So working in those environments, obviously there's a lot of activities that can potentially harm the human. And as a result, we essentially go in and we try and anticipate potentially what will be there. So, oh, there's asbestos over there. Yes, we know there's asbestos. We have to react to that and we have to control it and not expose our personnel along the lines of that. So essentially what I do every day is go talk to people, which is our communication piece, and find out what they're up to and what's scheduled in the future and how can we help and essentially help the worker themselves, but also the company and the environment on how we can control these exposures, but not just for the worker, but for everyone. You never only influence one person, you influence a whole group.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's like a lot of different players that you're interacting with. And I think, you know, that's a question I have, we're going to get into a little bit later on. But also too, I guess like the type of work that you're involved in must vary based on the people that you're interacting with or the matter that you're handling, whether it's environmental, whether it's, you know, health and safety for the workers themselves. But yeah, like I said, I guess we're going to get into that shortly. Well, maybe we can slide into this next segment, A Day in the Life, and, you know, we can add to this understanding of what you're doing. I'd love to hear what takes up your day, what types of activities you're involved in.
Yeah, of course. So what I do, I work in a mine at present, but please keep in mind my occupation is so varied that what I do in an everyday situation will be completely different from my colleagues that work in the military or consultancy or aviation and so forth. So this is just my little day in the life of, but essentially it starts quite early. I get to work before everyone else on purpose because we have to do all our pre-calibrations and so forth, whatever equipment we're using for the day. And we have to do it before we start any of our work. So once I do all my pre-calibrations, I then go and visit the work area that I'm going to monitor that day or sample that day. And essentially, I go sit with the guys. So I go sit with my crews and guys, all different types of genders and associations and so forth. But I go sit with my people and I go and talk to them. So I walk in first thing in the morning, 5 minutes before they start work, and go, hello, everybody. It's a great way to gauge the room very quickly when you walk into the door and see everyone. They're either drinking their morning coffee or reading the newspaper or just chatting or starting the day themselves. And that's when I get a real sense of, is the work that we scheduled going to occur? So this is when I really get those nitty gritty little bit of information. And sometimes it's like, no, we're going to have a delay by an hour, or no, we've been delayed by 3 days, or yep, let's go. Let's hit the goals today. And that really depends on the situation. So I also get to talk to a lot of people at that stage, and I get a little bit of information about what's projected in the future as well. So I take my little notepad and I write stuff down, or I put it in the mind, and I address that in the future as well throughout the day. But once I get through the line out or the morning meeting or whatever verbiage you use, I then get to hook up my monitors to the lucky person. There's always a little bit of fun trying to figure out who the lucky person is, because I've had people run away from me in the past. There's a couple of cheeky people that I deal with that deliberately pretend to run away. And then they're just 3 steps down the road. They just stop and wait for me to come to them. But it's all a little bit of fun. And essentially, we hook up the monitors depending on what we're monitoring. So if we're doing dust monitoring, or we're doing welding or noise or so forth, will dictate what you wear for the day. And the person, I do full-day monitoring. So essentially what they do is they wear the monitor for the day, and I go for a little bit of instructions and how are you wearing it, how you're wearing it, what this will contribute to and so forth. So they get their own little personal training blurb and all that. But then we go through the rundown of, I'll come visit you throughout the day as well. So be prepared. I'm going to pop up out of nowhere. But I also go talk to their leaders or their bosses or whoever's in charge and go, this is the situation. This is what we discussed about. But also, how's everything going? So this is my moment to have those really one-on-one, in-depth conversation of how you're going. The people that put the monitors on, I find out about their day. I find out about their family, what their holidays are coming up for. And I get that really one-on-one, in-depth conversation where I just get to enjoy my conversation as well, because I've learned so much things. The people I know, the activities they do, this is how I get to know them. So I go through all that and I talk to the leaders and I find out what other issues they've got as well. So I might be coming to do dust monitoring, but there's a great big noise issue over the back there. Can you help us out? So this is where I'm getting my real in-depth finger on the pulse situation of my work site. From there, I kind of do a little bit of research. Oh, is that really an issue? Is it a maintenance issue or is it an exposure issue? And you just kind of figure it out. And that's that anticipation, recognize and so forth area. Then I finally get to do some data entry. So after I've done all that, that's like 2-3 hours. I go down and I sit down and do my data entry. I write my notes and I go for the process. I might go do some different monitoring that I've organized for the day. I might go meet up with people and do check-ins and make sure that they're okay. I might just go to meetings and do risk assessments. I might do chemical evaluations. It really depends on the day what they need and what service I can provide to them. But after the end of the day, get close to the end of the day, I then go collect my monitors and I get that one-on-one time again with my people. And essentially what we do is we go through the day. How'd you go? What did you do? What did you get up to? I saw this. What did you see? What did you think of the situation? Did you see any different activities going on? Were you experiencing different activities? And this is all real nutshelly, but it's a blurb and it explains to me what's going on and what potential exposures they have. So that monitoring I've done, I can now quantify with what they're saying and what they did and what I observed and so forth. So we're putting essentially numbers to their story. We're making sure, hey, I don't like that noise over there. I'm like, well, your numbers now verify what you're saying. It's not just a anecdotal situation. It's now a verified situation. So having that information and all that actually helps us with a lot of other things like controls and so forth. But that's what happens. And then I go do my post-calibration. So I'm normally there after everyone leaves as well. So I'll do my post-calibration and I'll essentially go through making sure the equipment was correct. We didn't do anything wrong with the equipment, and do all my sampling COC, so my chain of custody and so forth. Well, at the end of the day before I get to leave, but I've also set up equipment for the next day. So it's a really long and varied day. And I'll be honest, that what I just told you will be completely different tomorrow. Like, it's so different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's probably a good thing as well. I mean, you're fighting against the mundane and having that variety, I suppose, right? Which is certainly helpful.
Yeah, I always tell people I'm never bored.
Yeah. So typically you would have like just one person hooked up that you're monitoring throughout the day, or you could have a few going at the same time? Or?
It depends on the situation, the task and so forth. But I can have anything from today. I have one person just because that's how it worked out. And I can have up to 18. It really depends on the situation. 18 is a bit extreme and I only do that very, very, very rarely. But it really depends on what we're trying to achieve on that day. And most of the time, if I'm getting that amount of people, essentially they're all doing this one task. It's an odd task. And we just had to take advantage of the situation.
Oh, that's quite interesting. You mentioned something off the top. I mean, in the beginning of your day, you're pre-calibrating, you're getting ready for the day. Does that involve just testing the equipment, checking that out? Or what exactly were you referring to there?
Obviously, we have our equipment left overnight. So we check it in the morning to make sure it's still running, make sure it's definitely charged. We don't have a half battery or it's a faulty equipment, something coming overnight we just don't know about. We also do our pre-calibrations, make sure it's meeting the specifications or for our requirements, which is actually really great. We have an association that helps us with all of that. And what it is, it's just checking everything. So if I need a sample dust versus welding, there's different requirements. So I have to make sure that each time I do something different, it all meets the requirements set out.
One other quick question here too. In terms of the role that you're filling, are there several others that are doing the same thing as you, or it's you and you alone within this particular department or this area? Like, how does that work within a company of the size of Rio Tinto?
It really depends. On my mind personally, it's just me. Every now and then I get a little bit of help from a part-time person, but it really depends. It's mostly me. My other previous experience, I've had situations where it's been two of us or it's been four of us. It really is a company and a site dependent situation. I have colleagues in this company that have three people on one side and I'm extremely jealous of. And then other colleagues that are completely like me and they're by themselves. And most of our sites are in, I wouldn't say not all of them are remote, but they're remote enough that you do pick up that phone and you do call your friends that are by themselves as well, just to keep that community spirit alive.
Like, in terms of the relationships that you have with the people that you're putting equipment on and monitoring, what is that like? Like, is it something where they see you as someone who's helping them in their job, keeping them safe, keeping their environment safe? Or is it sometimes like, I don't want to deal with this, or it's a hindrance or it's an annoyance? Like, how is that perceived by workers themselves?
Completely varied. It's everything, what you said, and everything in between. So when they haven't had someone who's been out there constantly, for example, one of my sites were like, we haven't seen one of you in 3 years. They're completely, do we have to do this? Because they've never done it. And then other people are like, oh, I haven't seen you today. I'm like, oh no, I'm dealing with another crew down the road. And for example, today I walked into work, they're like, you're back. And I'm like, yes, I'm here. Hello, how are you? And so they used me, and you just got to build those relationships. And I think that's one of the best things, that once you get consistent and once you keep doing it and being there, showing up and explaining the situation and not just dumping it and walking away, you really build those connections. And that's why I have some of my lovely American colleagues, because I'm in America, essentially coming, and I was having lunch and they sat and talked to me going, oh, I wanted to ask you something about Australia. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go for it. I'll keep eating while we chat. And so you really build those relationships where normally other sites, there's essentially no talking. There's no in-between lunch times and so forth. But now I'm getting a really great community here that are just getting used to me, getting used to the process and so forth.
You've mentioned this a couple times over, but the importance of communication and also relationship building. You know, if the workers themselves understand the reasoning for this and how it's, you know, one, keeping them safe and improving the work conditions, and that's being communicated clearly, and plus all of this like non-work related relationship building as well. Yeah, I'm sure you can like put it together in such a way that you can have these fruitful relationships. So. Well, I do want to jump into this other segment here, a pathways one. And researching this, I do understand that this was not a field that was on your radar, at least initially, from a professional standpoint. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how things unfolded to the point where you ended up within this world of industrial hygiene.
Honestly, like every single person I've ever met until they're in my position, I didn't know it existed. I also agreed that it was cleaning or dental hygiene. That's essentially the two extremes I get.
that's what I thought too. Yeah.
Everyone says that. And now I just go, don't worry, I don't expect you to understand. I'll explain it to you. But I didn't know it existed. I originally went to university for environmental science. I was an environmentalist to begin with. Like so many other people, I came out during the GFC, which was a little bit hard to get a job when you're a graduate. It was just that really odd time where they weren't really wanting to employ anyone new. So I decided to go into admin. Luckily, I went into admin into a really big company, really big construction company, and I was able to transfer over into environment, which I did for a couple of years. I was having a great time, did really well in it. But then I went to a site and they had an opportunity. And I will be honest, I was the youngest one there and I was the newest one there and no one else wanted to do it. So off I went and did the training, but it was a great opportunity. I had that ability to learn something new, which was industrial hygiene or occupational hygiene, depending on your country of origin. And from there, I met this really awesome lady who was teaching the training and she encouraged me to study. It was one of those, well, you picked it up really easy. You actually seem to enjoy yourself. Why don't you pursue this? Like, we need hygienists. Like, we need someone in this field. And I did. I went to university part-time while I was working full-time and I pursued this. And about a couple of weeks after I graduated, I had a job. It's one of those professions that not a lot of people know about, so it's hard to get people into it, but the positions are there. They're waiting for you. You obviously have to do the hard work to get to them, but once you're in, you've got a position.
And also, too, it seems to afford the opportunity to maybe work in some remote locations as well, like being from Australia and now in America, in California, right? I mean, that must be exciting as well.
Oh, it's amazing. I went and talked to a group of kids the other day, school kids, and they were just like, well, do you love your work? I'm like, I love my work because it allows me to pursue what I want, and that's traveling. And essentially, I have done all this hard work in really remote locations, especially in Australia. I've worked in some remote locations, but it allowed me to travel overseas. It allowed me to build that experience. And it also allowed me to move to America with my experience and knowledge. And if that's something that appeals to anyone, please look into it. It's an amazing opportunity. And the pathways are so varied. I went university way. Some people go experience way. And they just build their experience years after years after years. And equivalent to me, they're my colleagues, they're my leaders, they're everything. And that's something that there's so many different varieties to get to where we want to be.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think it's such an important consideration when you are evaluating any type of work. Of course, the roles, responsibilities, and how well that's going to jive with you. But then also like all these other things, these other factors that, you know, if you're into travel, wonderful. Then, you know, like a job like this would sound appealing. But if it's not something for you, then that's also a consideration that you have to be wary of, perhaps. So, yeah, I like that added sort of perspective, I suppose, when you're evaluating and looking at things. It's not just the roles or responsibilities. It's all the other things that come with the job. Well, I do have this other segment here, a Q&A discovery, and I have a few questions lined up here for you. Clearly, I think you have this passion for the work that you're involved in, and I can see how, you know, based on your background, you've already mentioned you started like with this interest in environmentalism, and doing what you're doing is helping in that sense. But then also, too, you have this other side of supporting health-based initiatives. I'd love to hear about how you're accomplishing both of these aims, you know, one, the environmental side, and then two, the health and safety. Would you have any specific examples of how you're going about this?
So there's all different ways to do it. So a lot of my work integrates into the health side. So we're part of health, but we're slightly off to the side of health. So while we're evaluating exposures and so forth, you have to think about the human health aspect. So if we do have an exposure, how are we impacting our people? So working with my on-site medical facility, so I'm really lucky I have a nurse practitioner with me. Previously, I've had doctors and other health professionals, and I've been really lucky that I've integrated into them very well, where I've got this massive exposure. Are you seeing it with anyone?
Sorry, when you say exposure, like for example, what would you be referring to?
Great example is noise. Everyone understands noise exposure because you go to a concert and remember how your ears slightly ring afterwards? That's noise exposure. That's really loud noise exposure. So something like that and trying to quantify it is always like obviously you have to be there with the right monitoring equipment. But we can normally get a general idea, especially noise. So I've had situations where I had some really great medical professions like, we're seeing something here. We're seeing something. Are you seeing something? And we've been able to investigate this situation. And essentially it was a faulty bit of equipment that needed some maintenance. And between us, we've able to quantify it. We're able to show that there's, while protections are being worn and they're working, there's slightly something going on there. We need to start looking into it a bit more. So working with everyone involved, we're able to fix this piece of equipment. I think we actually replaced it just after I left, to be honest. That was one of my old sites, and I didn't get to see the outcome of the situation, but we had a really positive effect. But then there's all these other different things. So nowadays we're thinking about whole worker health. So that's obviously the physical, but the mental as well. So I'm part of the, I'm the peer support coordinator. So we're looking at mental health and how we can support our people. And as the coordinator, I've got this brilliant group of people that work with me, and they're all from different life backgrounds, shapes, sizes, everything in between. And between us, we're just being these nice little friendly ears, or just a presence to see if someone's having a bad day, they can talk to us. If someone needs a bit of advice, well, we're not therapists, we're not nothing, but we have these avenues that we have employee assistant programs, and they actually help us with this, this, and this. And just generally being good people, but we got a nice little badge with it as well. But there's just things like that, and really worrying about poll worker health, because I'm sure many people in my profession will happily tell you about this, but if you have exposure, especially to noise, it can actually start to impact you. So people ringing in their ears, tinnitus, they just get really annoyed, and they, people can't understand why. I'm like, well, you've got a constant ringing in your ear. Of course you're going to get annoyed after a while. So things like that, it's not just a physical component, it's actually a mental component as well.
That's really interesting. That's another thing that I never would have expected would have been within your roles and responsibilities. I would have assumed it would have been much more just on that technical side of, you know, like you mentioned earlier, monitoring based off of devices or, you know, air quality or things of that nature. But the mental health side as well, you're involved in.
The role is so varied. I have people that are working laboratories and they never leave the laboratories. And they're amazing. They can tell you all about mold that I can't tell you. I'm like, yes, there's mold. I can sample for it. I can tell you this. But they can go into nitty gritty and the species and so forth. Or we have people with indoor air quality or asbestos or something like that. We've got people that I work with that are just experts in silicosis. And I'm like, oh, that's just something that I love coming to talk to you, but that's not really my passion. My passion is generalists, where I get to talk to people every day.
On the heels of what you're just speaking of there, I mean, in terms of some of the individuals that you are, you know, encountering within your day, maybe you could shed a little bit more light on that.
Oh, there's heaps. I deal with everyone. That's the best way to explain it. So I deal with managers to executives, to operators, to janitors, to electricians, to millwrights, you name it, I deal with it. Leaders, supervision, and so forth. So essentially, I talk to everyone. It's kind of funny. I think I sent you some funny photos of me interacting with some of the electricians. And it was just a fun time. And we're essentially trying to be serious, but of course that went into being silly and playing patty cake, because we have that great relationship. So you talk to everyone, you get to involve everyone. I think I've sent you also a clip of a blast. That's me hitting the button on the blast, just because I happen to be there with the guys and monitoring them. And it's just one of those things, when you get integrated into these relationships and build these relationships, you get involved in their lives, their work life and their daily lives. And I'm really lucky where I know when one of their kids has achieved a sporting achievement. And I get super excited for them. I know when they are going for a development opportunity. And when they get it, I'm like a proud mum, because I am so excited for them, because I know how much they tried. I know when, you know what, it's not a good day today. And I'm like, that's fine. You can have bad days. It's okay. As long as we get you back to those good days, that's what's important. We need to keep you guys going. We need to make sure that you're okay. So having those interactions, I talk to everyone, so I know what's going on. And yeah, it's just a really great opportunity. If you like a bit of social, but you like a little bit of science behind you, it's a good opportunity to have.
Yeah, it strikes me as also compelling, quite frankly. I mean, it's a really unique position where you're getting a pulse on the company, really, at so many different levels. Like you said, all from the executive level right on through, you know, to every other imaginable level within the company, it would seem, as well. And getting, like I said, like this clear idea of where people are at within their lives. And what also I like about this is, you know, we've spoken about the technical aspects of your work, but then also that what keeps coming up is this personal side where you're able to connect with people. And obviously, if you're able to do these types of things, like that's where a lot of fulfillment can be derived from the work itself too. So yeah, I think we're painting this really clear and nice picture of the work that you're doing here. I have this other question though. You know, based on your work, again, having this potential, I'm assuming at least, to upend workflows and schedules based on, for example, a safety-related issue or maybe an environmental concern, what kind of pressures might you experience to balance out the well-being of, say, workers, the environment, or, you know, company goals?
Oh, it's a hard path to travel, and anyone in a similar position will understand this one, where it can't just be all happiness and sunshine and everyone agrees with you. We do have priorities. We do have risks. We do have financial constraints. So yes, we want to fix this piece of equipment, but this over here might potentially harm someone very, very quickly. let's go deal with that first. And you really having to navigate those fields and making sure everyone feels heard and understand, like, guys, if I had $1 billion, I'll change the world. But let's be realistic about this application. Let's make sure you're safe. And that is our first priority. I need to make sure that you're healthy and safe. That's bottom line, nowhere to go past that. Now let's see what we can build on this. Can we improve this with little improvements? Can we start looking at engineering controls coming in? So we've got to engage an engineer and so forth. I might not get the solution for you straight away, but let's work this. Let's work this to completion. And just trying to get management and everyone involved and trying to navigate this field and really being honest and transparent with people and going, look, we want the workers help. We want them working. But we also have to look after them. So let's make sure that there's no miscommunication here. They are first, and what we're trying to achieve is going to be a good thing for everyone. Like, it's going to help you by keeping them working. It's going to help them by keeping them happy. Like, how do we navigate this together? So it is very, very hard. I'm not going to joke around about that one. I'm very honest and transparent about that one. I've had some younger hygienists ask me questions. I'm like, look, you got to play it by ear. Each situation will be slightly different. Let's see how we can do this together. Let's map it out. And can we have a couple wins here and then do a big win over here? Like, see how we can navigate the situation.
I mean, those types of issues, are they presenting themselves on a daily basis where you're constantly having to make some difficult decisions about these things, or are these things that, you know, occasionally pop up here and there?
It really depends on the situation again. So if I could get $1 billion, I would change a lot of things right now. But are they harming anyone right now? No, they're not. But I would love just to fix them.
In a perfect world.
Yeah. I had an opportunity and I had the resources. I'm like, okay, we're fixing all this. Let's go. Let's go and achieve world peace if we can. But let's be realistic as well.
Yeah. Okay. You know, this other question as well, I mean, the learning curve for the work that you're involved in, I'm guessing it could have been fairly steep, at least initially. Like, I'm getting this vibe that a lot of this comes with, you know, a heavy amount of experience in working within the company, getting to know the company itself, but then also the workers and the relationships and all of this. But that steep learning curve, you know, is that a thing? Did that exist for you? And then even where you're at right now within your career, are you constantly being pushed to dive into more and to learn more, or have things kind of leveled off for you?
Initially, yes. My baptism by fire, as so many other people have experienced in multiple different fields, was a couple of weeks after graduating. I had a position. There was nothing. I created the hygiene program. I bought all the equipment for the very first time. I set up contracts with my laboratories to analyze some of my samples. I wrote all the documentation. Like, it was very hard, extremely hard.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It was, but I, once again, that lovely lady who pushed me into hygiene, who I do probably owe a lot more chocolates than I gave her, she was amazing. She guided me. Like, I think we need to realize that the next generation needs to guide. And I was really lucky where I had a bit of guidance. It was quite funny because I was in Australia, she was in America, and she was trying to guide me through emails and weird time phone calls. And that's the thing, like, you've got resources out there, please use them. But the learning curve was very steep, very hard. And there was quite a few difficult learnings that I had to learn at that stage. And we discussed before about some people not wanting to wear monitors. That was a hard conversation to have at that stage in my career, because I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the backup. But now I do. I'm like, okay, let's go through the process. I know what to say now. I know how to address this. But when you're brand new, it's hard. So having that bit of backup is amazing. So that's why I'm very protective of anyone who comes into the industry. I'm like, I'll be your protection. Let's go. Let's go deal with this situation, because I don't want them to go through with what I learned the hard way. But then once you get to this nice steady state, you never stop learning. I've been reading articles on the weekend and I was just like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I should know that. And just learning something new and constantly learning, and there's ways to do things better. You should never be stagnant. You should always try and learn and do things that are a better way, or someone else had success. Let's trial it out. Look, it wasn't for us. We trialed it out, but good for us. We made an option to not be stagnant. So I think if you're constantly learning, good to be. And that's any profession anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I would think so. And also too, I mean, one of the reasons I asked that question is a lot of what you're involved in is based around science and technology, which unto itself, almost by definition, is constantly updating itself. It's constantly evolving. So, which means like people like yourself have to keep pace, right? In order to make sound decisions, you have to be, you know, willing to put in that little extra time to learn, you know, learn about some of these things or new ways of examining potential hazards or challenges, I guess. Okay. I have this last question in the segment here, and like at a cursory glance, I would assume that it would be fairly easy for you to find a sense of fulfillment in the work that you're doing. I'm kind of picking up on that feeling during the course of this conversation. But again, it kind of comes from the work itself. By definition, what you're doing, you're helping people stay safe, you're helping the environment. But I mean, all the same, I'd still love to hear, you know, your perspectives on this.
I think it is those people interactions and those successes. When we finally get this new fandangle ventilation system placed, and the guy's like, oh, it's amazing. Why didn't we have this before? I'm like, because we didn't have the data before. So all that stuff where I was annoying you every day to wear a monitor or to make sure you wear your PPE and wear your respirators and so forth, this resulted in this beautiful new achievement of us. We as a group achieved this. No individual achieved this. As a group, we did. And having those conversations like, oh, yeah, can you go deal with that noise over there now? And I'm like, yes, I can, but thank you for that. I'll take that as a success. But those interactions and those conversations, like I said before, I know about people's families. I know about parents that are about to become parents. I know about sisters and brothers and moms and dads and aunties and uncles. And then what's something that they're really proud of? I love playing the banjo. One of the people took me by surprise. I love playing the banjo. I'm like, why didn't you tell me this? That's awesome. But also just having those really awesome conversations. I love when I find out things about people and then you're like, you're so sneaky. How did you keep that from me? Like, I'm really proud of you. I can't believe you kept that. And we have people that are used to be professional sports stars and then like, I did not know that. And then it's quite funny because obviously American sports, I'm not quite on top of. And they tell me things. I'm like, you played in college? That's amazing. How did you do that? Or when they traveled and they climbed to base camp at Mount Everest, I'm like, whew, mind exploding and things like that. I really enjoy those human interactions. Like, it is fulfilling knowing that you're not personally involved in these people's lives, but you find out all about it. You find out about their success, their loves, their achievements, and they're so proud telling you. And it's like, my work little family is so, look at them. They're so awesome. How did they achieve this? I'm just so proud to be part of it.
Yeah, I can see that. Like I said, I'm definitely picking up this vibe in this conversation. And I think it sounds like to me, like you found the absolute perfect profession for yourself. You know, that's again, what I'm picking up here is that like you've combined your skills and interests in such ways that you're able to find fulfillment, like your people skills, social skills, you're constantly learning, whether it's, you know, about these people's lives themselves, learning about them, but then also, you know, working on ways of having positive impact, helping them in different ways, you know, keeping them safe, keeping the environment safe. So you're checking all the boxes here. At least that's what, you know, I'm getting from this conversation to this point. So yeah, good for you. I do have this other segment that I would like to get into really quickly here, a water cooler story segment. And here I just ask, you know, guests to indulge the listeners with a story related to their work. So I'm quite keen to hear what you have for us today, Robin.
Give you a bit of a challenging moment, but also a little bit of a happy moment for me. I was at a work site and I thought I was getting through to no one. I'll be honest. Like, I was weeks of like droning on about, hey guys, it's a really good idea to do this. Hey, wear this monitor. Hey. And just constantly like, let's be positive. Let's go do this. And the work site at the time was going through a bit of a down situation, but I'm just for weeks and weeks, I was just going through this. And I'll be honest, it was starting to get to me. I was going down myself. Like, I was at that point where my mental state was just like, I'm just exhausted. I've had no wins in weeks. I just need a win. I just really need a win. And I was a little bit down the dumps, to be perfectly honest. And everyone's been there. Everyone's like, well, this got me down the dumps. But then one of the guys came and talked to me, and this is one of the young fellas, and I'm so proud of him. But he came up to me and said, Ryan. I'm like, oh, God, what's he about to tell me? And he's like, I did something. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to HR. What's happened? He's like, I did this thing at home. I'm like, okay, it's not work-related. Yep, cool. And he's like, I removed asbestos, and I've just gone into shock. I'm like, oh my God, one of my favorite people has exposed himself to asbestos. And I've gone straight into shock. I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, I did what you told me. I'm like, well, I've never talked to you about asbestos. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I remember we did this training the other day. And it was weeks ago. I can't even explain the timeline here. But he's like, I made sure I shaved. I made sure I wore the right respirator. I made sure I set up my work area properly. I made sure that no one else entered the workplace. And he went through all these list of things that I actually went over. And he's like, I did it. And I was like, I just remember looking at him. I'm like, I must have had that face on where he was just like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm just in shock. I'm just in happy shock, but shock. And I'm like, are you serious? He's like, I did it. I did it all. Because in Australia, you can do certain removals at a low capacity. He's like, I did it. I even checked on the websites to make sure I was okay. And I'm like, I'm in general shock. And I'm like, okay, I'm so proud of you. Great job. I'm really, really happy for you. I cannot emphasize how much you made my day. And he's walked off and I'm like, I need to go have a cry. Like, I'm just mic drop. I'm done. Yeah. Everyone, we've succeeded today. Go home. And I was just like, oh my God, I got through to someone, but I also took it home with them and they protected their family. And I was just like, life's complete.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Like, what a story. What a story. I mean, talk about a win. You know, if you're searching for one for a little while there, then like that's obviously a big one. Because, I mean, you know, like what you're involved with, in some senses, you could say like it's almost a bit on a macro scale, at least within the company. Like you're protecting the work that you're involved in, by definition, is probably like meant to, you know, protect several people or, you know, departments of people perhaps. But then when you can have these like micro interactions as well and have it affect somebody to that point where they're changing their, you know, ways of living and life and everything else, that's got to be special. Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see the satisfaction you would have gotten in that moment, 100%. So yeah, I appreciate you sharing that.
Oh yeah. It's super positive when you can impact people that way. I think everyone who does that, great job. You're achieving world peace in that aspect.
Yeah. I love that. I love that perspective. Well, we are rounding the bend here into this last segment, a crystal ball segment. And, you know, it is as it sounds here. We're looking towards the future, trans predictions, so on and so forth. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of your profession, it was this black box for me prior to diving into it all. But in the course of this conversation, again, based off some of the research, I do understand that it is this unique blend of, you know, strict scientific rigor as well as professional judgment and a lot of experience, right? And, you know, from this perspective, I mean, I can envision AI acting as this tool to help balance some of those variables, you know, analyzing the safety of a certain situation or, you know, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. But all the same, I'd love to hear your perspectives on the potential use of AI or maybe its use right now. I don't know.
We're already trying to use it a little bit, to be honest. So AI is never going to remove our profession. It is a lot of knowledge and a lot of understanding and so forth. But using it as a supplement tool, yes, 100%. If it can remove that 50-hour job of data entry and then analysis and so forth, yes, that's awesome. But we still need to do that interpretation and we need to apply it practically to the situation. But yeah, I think AI coming in to help us is a great tool and it's on its way. We haven't embraced it as much as we can, but at the same time, we're also making sure that it meets our requirements. So making sure it goes into that scientific realm and not just remove people and then we have this fallout from it. But we really need to integrate it into our everyday practices and just save us time so we can go out and do more.
In terms of, I guess, like the aspects of your job that you don't think AI will ever be able to come in and replace, what would you say to that? Like what aspects of your work do you think are immune to the effects of AI?
I think you already know it's that human interaction part. Not only that, but also the monitoring part. We're monitoring humans. Like we're not going to have any AI come in and actually put those monitors on anyone. That's just not practical. So having those human interactions and doing the physical part of the work is really never going to get replaced. It's just part of everyday bread and butter situation. So definitely using it for a positive, but not completely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That was exactly what I was thinking was those relationships, you know, and in the course of this conversation, I've come to learn that like how important that is. I think, I mean, you could probably do the work that you're doing without having those high level skills in terms of building relationships, but the level of impact that you're able to have, or you know, how well you're able to do that job, would be severely impacted by that. And if you're at the top of your game with, you know, socially speaking, I think, you know, that leveraged with all the scientific background and knowledge and experience, yeah, you're well ahead of the game. But if, you know, AI coming in and trying to replace that, yeah, it's just not going to happen, right? Almost an impossibility. So yeah. Well, I can't believe we've blown through this conversation, Robin. It's been a true pleasure. I've enjoyed this every second, and I know listeners are really going to enjoy it. I know I've learned a lot, and I'm sure everyone else has too. So thanks so much for joining the program today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Now, for those interested in learning more about Robin and her work, you can do so via LinkedIn. And for reference, I will have a link for this within the show notes. And if you like today's show, please be sure to tell a friend and share. To show further support, you can always rate, review, and subscribe wherever you access your podcasts. And then lastly, as I mentioned off the top, head on over to YouTube. I do have that channel over there, which does include highlights from these main audio recordings. And if you do make it over there, I would absolutely love, love, love that like or subscribe. And finally, don't forget to join us on the next episode of Life as a, where we'll continue to explore and unearth the details of professions and the people behind them. I'm your host, Christopher Schoenwald. Until next time, stay curious about life and living.